Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Republic Forces Radio Network, continuing our coverage of all things Star Wars animation and our coverage of The Clone Wars. This week, discussing our latest episode, Shadow Warrior. And joining me tonight are Jen.
Hey, guys.
Jerry.
Hey, guys. Jerry here. Glad to be on my first episode for season four. But hey, you can also hear me this week on Marvelicious Toys podcast with Justin and Arnie at MarveliciousToys.com.
And also returning this week for his first episode of season four is Nathan P. Butler.
Hello, everybody. Misa back.
We are going to be discussing this week's episode, Shadow Warrior, which had the fabulous fortune cookie, who a person truly is, cannot be seen with the eye. Well, let's go ahead and crack the egg that's looming over everyone's head. What the crap? Last week, the Gungans, or 2 weeks ago, the Gungans sent their entire army to defend one chick from Naboo. This week, they're ready to go to war with them. What did we miss?
Yeah, one of my earliest notes on the show was, wait a minute. He was all set to help without question. But now we might be joining the Separatists.
Well, you know, it bothered me quite a bit seeing it. I looked at Jody. I mean, we usually watch these things together. I looked over at her. We both kind of did that double take. Like, did we miss something here? I mean, she's not nearly as fanatical a follower of their series as I am. And she's still sitting there saying, what the heck is going on? I think, though, when you actually see late in the episode where you get to see Rish Lu trying to talk to the Gungan army, and then out comes Jar Jar dressed like Leone, and they're just basically willing to follow whatever anybody in authority says, I think that pretty much answers the question. As long as Leone is under someone's power and he's saying, let's go to war, the army is apparently made of a bunch of idiots outside of Tarples. They wind up taking out the one guy with a brain in the army. So, I mean, I'm not sure if they're meaning there to be a longer time period between it, or if they're literally pushing the, wow, these people are easily duped angle. But if they do that, it kind of undermines Jar Jar being duped in episode two being a big point if they're so easily just tricked into anything.
Do you guys remember the movie Blazing Saddles, where Cleavon Little shows up at the town as the sheriff, and he holds himself at gunpoint, and he gets himself out of the people before they mob him, and he gets by himself, closes the door, and goes, man, you're so good. They are so dumb. That's what I actually wrote down. It's like, man, these Gungans are so dumb. And that's what I was referring to. Same thing there, Nathan. It's like, wait a minute, we're going to go attack those Naboo because they're keeping us down. Hey, we shouldn't follow the Separatists. They're bad. It's like, wow, shouldn't be hard to win an election among those people.
Jen, did you want to jump in? Because I have a couple points on this, but I want to let you have a chance.
No, you guys pretty much covered it. This whole thing just makes me sad. So you can go ahead.
And you notice they say that they're going to have a conflict with the Nabooians. Since when are the Naboo the Nabooians?
Okay, my two theories on this are going to that scene that Nathan talked about where they're, look, he's back, he's alive. And then he says, I wasn't thinking straight. I made a mistake. And then they're like, yep, that's him. So they're either used to him being just completely dumb and wishy-washy, or, and I didn't notice this last week, and I didn't go back and watch, I meant to, he was wearing the necklace that allowed him to be controlled, and Spooky Bone Through the Nose guy was out of the room when that call came in, so he just listened to whoever was closest, who happened to be Jar Jar. So when Jar Jar says, no, we gotta go, he's like, no, we've gotta go. Maybe that's what it was.
I'm thinking perhaps it was that Boss Leone is actually, he's a very young leader of the Gungans. He's actually still going through puberty, so any time that he's speaking and his voice is cracking and turning into Jar Jar, they just take it as normal because, well, it's just his age.
So we find out that Boss Leone is being controlled by a magic necklace. So once again, magic is rearing its head in our precious Clone Wars. Are we still okay with this? Do we feel like this needs to stay in the Harry Potter where it belongs? Or are we okay with a little bit of mysticism out of Gungans who we haven't seen, well, much of anything out of before?
This bugged the crap out of me. I thought it was so stupid. I'm sorry. It was just, it drove me nuts. I had my head in my hands the entire time this was going on. It's like, evil voodoo Gungan witchcraft? Like, what was that? Like, it just was so out of place. It did not feel like Star Wars to me at all. I would have had a lot more respect for it if they had just had some guy whispering in the boss's ear, like, oh, hey, you know, a couple weeks ago we sent the Gungans all to help out at Mon Calamari and they all got killed and what are we helping them to boo for? And then gone and tried to do that or something. But voodoo witchcraft necklace? Like, that hurt.
Yeah, I have to agree with Jen on that. I'm going to say some, I'll throw this out there now. I'm going to say some positive things about this show later on, but the premise of which the show is built on, with the magic necklace that if you wear it, suddenly you're just, you know, under the control of the guy. And apparently it sounded like it was some, you know, known artifact of Gungan culture, and Anakin just yanks in the air and crushes it. You know, I guess you got to do what you got to do for the situation. But yeah, I'm not a big fan of magic in my Star Wars. I know it's not unprecedented. We've certainly seen it. And oh, I'm sure, Nathan, you can cite a lot of the EU that's in. I mean, I'm just thinking, heck, if nothing else, Ewoks had, you know, their witch doctors and whatnot, right? Isn't that what we believe Logre to be? And you certainly see in the Ewok movies. But at the same time, when I start justifying this by referencing anything Ewok-related, especially the movies, you know we're starting off in a bad place.
Well, we had a little magic on Dathomir last season.
True that, but I guess I always interpret that as being a form of dark side usage of the Force. Maybe in the Star Wars universe it's one and the same, but it felt more, and I think you stated it well, Dan, it felt more Harry Potterish to me.
See, I actually didn't have much of a problem with the way that it was used this time. I just thought of it in terms of the way that we've seen artifacts being used to channel Force energy elsewhere. Usually it's that whatever it is being worn by the person using the Force. But you know, I could buy the idea of something being placed on someone that makes them open to suggestion, even telepathic suggestion, perhaps from a person who gave it to them, might have been the one originally somehow bonded to it and such. I mean, we see things like the Kyber crystal showing up in early drafts of stuff by Lucas. And of course, it winds up showing up in a slightly different form in Splinter of the Mind's Eye and elsewhere. So I mean, it really didn't bother me too much. The fact that they thought of it as magic, I mean, that seems like a Gungan thing to do. You know, they think of something that is the Force related that they can't understand, and it becomes magic. It didn't really get to me, although I do agree that it would have been better if Rish Lu was doing some of just the whispering in the ear. Though granted, it would have meant that Leone would have to be very easily manipulated without some type of magic. I just like the fact Richelieu's name is an obvious play on Cardinal Richelieu, you know, from France in the era of Louis XIII. And, I mean, this is the character that was immortalized, or I guess the historical figure immortalized as a character in The Three Musketeers. And he's been in pretty much every incarnation of The Three Musketeers as being retold, whether it's Disney or whatever, over the years. The name just sort of jumps out as this is the man whispering bad things into the ears of the leader to bring the society down and bring it into his grip. But they sort of undermine the parallel by making it a magic force or whatever type of mystical artifact that this was. It didn't bother me. I just thought it could have been done a little bit better. But I guess that's sort of the tale of this episode.
Okay, so as Nathan mentioned, Anakin destroys the necklace and they all go to confront Rish Lu. But Boss Leone has to go in and talk to him alone first, and there's a scuffle, and the boss gets stabbed and ends up in the hospital. And this is when we find out that Jar Jar looks just like him.
It made me wonder if this is the only reason Boss Leone was created as a character. If somehow they got the idea for this episode before thinking of the previous three episodes, and in the process thought, wouldn't it be cool? But wait, Jar Jar would never be mistaken for Boss Nass. So let's get Nass out of here for a little while, bring in this Leone character, and then hopefully sometime between now and the end of the Clone Wars, they'll find a way to bring Nass back in. Because, of course, in the EU, he's still boss. And the assumption was that that's why he was the one there in the funeral in Revenge of the Sith, though that may or may not be the case. But yeah, it just seemed like this is why, oh, and wait, it's just like anybody else. In fact, I turned and said while watching this, aha, it's just like all those times Anakin had a ship that wasn't the Resolute. This character is here to die. And then he didn't, which flabbergasted me.
While Anakin and Padme, well, and Jar Jar, are making this discovery, Richelieu is preparing to address the Gungans, and he tells them that Boss Leone is dead, and they're pretty much ready just to go along with continuing the attack on the Naboo. So Jar Jar makes his appearance, and with some clever voice disguising, maybe not so much, he does convince the Gungan army that he is the boss, and they are not going to attack, where Richelieu takes off on his Separatist-provided speeder bike, pursued by Anakin on a Cadu. So Jar Jar is left with Captain Tarples as the Separatists land, and Tarples kind of figures out what's going on. He always was the smartest one there.
You gotta hand it to George, though, for not making the obvious reference of having Tarples say that they were in big doo-doo this time, because as much as he reuses film lines, that was the more obvious Tarples line to reuse in an episode like this one.
That's true. That wouldn't have surprised me coming out of Tarples' mouth. Now, had he, like, made Anakin say it, that would have been surprising.
I could see Anakin maybe talking to the Gungans using a mocking Gungan accent, though, if he gets ticked off. That'd be kind of amusing.
That would be. So Jar Jar and Tarples go to meet with the droid commander, and it turns out, big surprise for some reason, that it's General Grievous. And this, you know, last week when we were talking about the preview, I said that I wanted to smack whoever thought this would be a fun addition to this episode, Jar Jar playing with the desk chair. And I still kind of stand by that. I know it was a funny, haha, oh, look, he's an idiot. He can't even take this seriously. But really, do we really need to see again? He's an idiot. He can't even take this seriously.
I love that bit. That was the funniest part of the episode. I was sitting there thinking, yep, that's totally what I would want to be doing. Of course, I wouldn't do it because he would have killed me.
Maybe it's just because I have kids that do that, and that's why it's like, no, stop it, behave yourself. Don't make me pull this episode over.
Maybe it's to explain why it is that Grievous doesn't realize that's not really Boss Leone, because the Gungans may be dumb, but this makes Grievous look dumb too, so you got to give him some kind of distraction and the dim lighting and everything else to give us any way to say that Grievous, you know, didn't somehow drop heavily in IQ just as much as he's dropped in fighting ability within the series.
See, to me, it was, wow, of all the stupid things I've seen Jar Jar and Gungans do, I didn't think that was horrible. It was kind of a really contained little gag with the chair. I mean, it was kind of Dr. Evil-ish, you know, to where you could kind of laugh at the situation without thinking it was over-the-top stupidity like we saw in episode one. At least I didn't think it was as bad. Maybe it's just because it's a cartoon, and by season four, I've just been taught to accept certain things out of this show.
The chair thing, at least we kind of had an inkling of it from last week's preview, so like it wasn't totally, I knew it was coming, so I could kind of brace for it. It didn't really bother me as much as it did in the preview, but right before the chair thing, I actually really liked the scene where they walk through the door, and Grievous is just sitting at the table, and I don't think they realized it was going to be Grievous or something, because Jar Jar has this oh crap look on his face, and I actually thought that was kind of funny, because you could tell he's just totally in over his head, and that was actually more comedic to me than the chair thing. The chair thing was tedious. I thought it was a little bit silly.
I don't think there was anything logical that is messed up about that particular scene. It's, why does Grievous need the Gungans to take on the Naboo? That, I think, would be a more concerning matter, I would think.
Oh, absolutely, because as they proved in episode one, they're not a match for them, so why bother? They could invade the entire surface, and they wouldn't really know what's going on. So what's the big deal?
I actually really liked it. I thought that worked out well, because it would be such a detriment to the Naboo morale when you think about it. They've cultivated this relationship with these people, and now they have like this civil war, which is really hard on the morale of the armies involved. And I thought that was a pretty clever move, actually. It wasn't handled very well, but I the concept of it, I liked.
I kind of feel like we have the same situation going on here that we had in the first couple episodes of this season, to where it seems like it works better. Maybe it's more legitimate that when the Separatists want to take over a planet, that one faction of the planet is actually supporting them, and then it doesn't look like the Separatists have taken over the planet, but rather the planet came over to the Separatists. Ha ha, take that, Republic, in your face. To where, hey, the Gungans realize we're right, and those Nabooians, or the Nubians, or the Naboists, or whatever they're called, they've been trying to keep the Gungan man down, and you know, they just got theirs. And the Gungans came around, and now Naboo is legitimately part of the Separatist Confederation. Because remember, they got their own Senate. They're like a real little government, as we saw last season and whatnot. So, but I'm assuming a lot here. I'm giving the show some credit here by assuming that. Because, yeah, Grievous, what I don't understand is why Grievous just didn't look at Leone and say, or, you know, who he thought was Leone and say, wow, that's a shame you don't want to follow me in battle. You know, crush his head, go outside and tell all the Gungans, hey, you're going to follow me in battle. It didn't really seem like the objections of Boss Leone would have mattered to the situation. Grievous is like, well, hey, I understand you're not going to follow us in battle now, and this is a problem. Well, Nathan, kind of like you, why is it a problem? Grievous, just go take him and do it anyway.
I like the factionalism idea, and yeah, it does seem a lot like what happened on Dax/Mon Calamari/Mon Cala/Partridge in a Pear Tree the last few weeks, but it's one of those things that I guess, maybe it's a theme for this season. I mean, maybe that's the idea. They call it battle lines. Maybe what they're talking about is a division within the cultures themselves, but it just seems like one of those things that if this was a primary tactic for the Separatists, you would have thought we would have seen it a heck of a lot more before now, as opposed to having it all lumped in here at the beginning of season four, just like lumping in all the Gungan or water-based world stuff all here at the beginning of season four. Gotta wonder if somebody in the writing room just kind of came up with this idea and said, let's do this a lot, and they just all went with it, even though it really didn't thematically fit with the process we've seen the Separatists do before, because usually it's just straight overwhelming force, it seems like.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you guys there. On one hand, if battle lines means that a lot of the themes we're going to see in the episodes this season are them splitting planets, and those are the battle lines being drawn between two different peoples on planets, that's interesting. But I think the 22nd time we see that this season, that's going to get a little old. Something that might have, an idea that might have been spread out over, oh, I don't know, the last 4 years. That would have been good.
Even if Grievous and the droids, the tactical droid Grievous, the entire Separatist droid army here that's on Naboo, even if they thought the Gungans were their bestest of pals and are going to be working together to destroy the Nabooians or whatever, are they really going to take the word of one Gungan to shut down their entire droid army so that they can easily be overrun by the Gungans? I mean, unless your deal is ironclad, I don't see any army allowing that type of tactical control into the hands of a very recent ally like this, if they even were an ally, which apparently hadn't even been confirmed yet.
You know, that's right where we were going to go next. Jar Jar gives Captain Tarples the wink, wink, nudge, nudge, go do that thing you were going to do, and he slips outside, puts in a call about what's going on, and then somehow gets everybody to turn off all the droids.
By the way, good thing for the Naboo that the Separatists, once they landed, weren't monitoring any communications at all.
Well, you know, they'd just gotten there. They hadn't had time to put everybody's contacts in their phones, so...
And they couldn't, I mean, they couldn't confirm the rumors about an impending invasion because, you know, a communications disruption means only that.
Exactly. If he hadn't been able to make the call, then they'd have known something was up.
Communications disruption means only one of two things, invasion or you have AT&T.
Oh, but no, Dan, I'm with you because one thing that I thought was lazy or just bizarre at the least was, wow, Grievous steps out. Hey, all your robots, they're not working. Ha, look what we did. Well, you know, as an audience member watching the show, I'd kind of like to know what you did.
Yeah, kind of, because I know they didn't have a 9-year-old boy in a starship to go take it out for them. So,
but that was this whole episode. As soon as you hit about the midpoint of the episode, the whole thing is, wow, I kind of would have liked to have seen what you did, how you did that. Because the entire about last 10 minutes, 15 minutes of the episode, depending on if you're talking commercial time or not, just zips by. I mean, I'm expecting a two-part episode here, and we really didn't get that. I kind of wish, you know, as much as I don't like to see Gungans all the time, I kind of wish this had been a two-part episode, because once you hit that point, once Jar Jar meets with Grievous and we get to the point in our discussion here within the episode, it's like the thing goes to light speed and you're left blinking saying, what just happened? I actually liked the episode, hokey as it was, goofy as it was, up to right about this point we're talking about right now. And then after that, I'm scratching my head even more than I was at the beginning of the episode with the premise in general.
See, I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, and I won't talk plot points, but when the show, I watched on StarWars.com, and when the show was at the 20-minute and 45-second mark, and I saw it was only 22 minutes long, I thought to myself, oh, wow, they're not going to wrap all this up in a minute and a half. This is going to carry on to next week. No, no, we'll just wrap it up. Thanks. Put a little bow on. See you later.
This is what is known as the, when you're on Tatooine, you're going to commune with Qui-Gon solution.
Oh.
See, I'm right there with you, Jerry. I had about 18 minutes on StarWars.com. I'm like, wow, I thought everybody said that this one was done in one episode and that next week was a one-shot too. And then 4 minutes later, it is done. And it's like, wait, what the crap? That's how, okay. But we're going to get to what happened there in that last magical 4 minutes. First of all, we've got a massive 8,000-on-1 fight between General Grievous and all the Gungans. And all the Gungans managed to do what multiple Jedi Masters and trained soldiers haven't. They drop Grievous. What the heck?
I think this is – I read DeBede's post on Star Wars Action News. I think we need to let Jen take this one.
Oh, he was furious. He was like, we were watching it together. We always watch these together. And he was just having like this silent, flaily rage on the couch next to me. He was so unhappy. And it doesn't make sense. Like, I had a really hard time with this scene too, because he's a cyborg, right? So he has little living bits that are left and is encased in this electronic body. And they're lobbing these Boomba things, which I took to be like little EMP grenades. And I would think that just all ridiculousness aside of the Gungans being the ones to take him out, but shouldn't that kill him to have his electronic parts shut down since those are supposed to be keeping him alive? I don't know. This whole thing just, I had my head in my hands and DeBede was having an aneurysm.
See, Jen, what you just said, I guess kind of as a negative, I thought was a positive because it's kind of like the Ewoks in Return of the Jedi. And again, I know that's not going to be the strong basis of argument for a lot of people, but to me, I really appreciated this scene and thought it was really cool because, I mean, number one, I'll respond for a minute of what the show actually gave me versus kind of what I wish the show gave me. But that battle in of itself, what occurred to me, it's like, hey, the Gungans do have a weapon that you would think would be fairly effective against Grievous. Now, they weren't able to get those Boomas to him at first because he was pretty good in deflecting them. But once Tarples went in, I guess we can talk about that separately, but when he went in and at least got the distraction, you know, with his sacrifice, and then all the other Gungans just started flailing on him, I thought, wow, the Gungans actually kind of went up a couple notches in my book, which means they're like on notch number two. But I thought that was actually a really good use of the situation to say, hey, this, you know, when it's one General Grievous against an army of Gungans, and the Gungans may have something that the clones in the Republic do not have, that makes them kind of a threat, much like Ewoks were against, you know, scout walkers with their logs and their rocks and everything. So I thought it was kind of cool.
I see where you're coming from. But my problem with it is that this takes place in the middle of the war. And I would think that people would say, you know, hey, this worked. Let's get a whole bunch of these. And every time we see Grievous, just rain down these things on or something. Like, I would think someone would learn from this. Instead, it's I had a hard time with that.
Well, see, the problem is nobody wants to be the Tarples for the next battle.
You know, watching this, I was kind of torn on it because it's ridiculous to think, or at least there's a level on which it's ridiculous to think, that after all the different people who have gone up against Grievous, for these to be the ones who were able to bring him down low. And yes, having him be able to be captured at all during the span of the war brings up the same questions that the end of The Force Unleashed 2 did for people who played that game with another particular character. But at the same time, it was thrilling to watch, and it definitely had that same sense of, you know, the Ewoks rising up. It's always, you know, the weak rising up against the strong that's been one of those themes that Lucas has liked to include within his stories previously. So it worked out pretty well. I mean, I thought the moment of Tarpaul's going up against Grievous, Tarpaul's sacrifice, was kind of a shock to me. I didn't expect the character to go out like that, but at least it was a dramatic moment. It certainly built up to a high point in a lot of ways for the episode. As for why they don't use it again later, I gotta wonder if part of it, and this is me rationalizing and probably retconning before a real retcon even exists, I would think that after the way that it winds up turning out with the whole prisoner exchange and all of that type of stuff, I would think that most of the events that happened on Naboo during this episode would not be shared with people outside those who actually experienced it, I would think. Because no one wants to... I would not think that Anakin or Padme would want to admit the way that trade went down and the overall overarching premise of it, unless what we're going to see in this season is a building of suspicion towards those two and their relationship. So I guess I could see a retcon that would say, wow, this really works. Too bad we can't tell anybody about it.
Yeah. Amazing. You took down Grievous? Well, why don't you still have him?
Well, you had to get rid of Grievous, though, too, because he's not supposed to encounter Anakin until episode 3. So they had to do something to make sure that if there's going to be a climactic battle with Grievous in the episode, it could not be Anakin involved.
And Anakin was pretty much unconscious, so he didn't really get a good sizing up of him.
Well, and I wrote down the note, of course, Anakin takes off and goes after the bad guy Gungan before he ever gets to see Grievous, before Grievous shows up. So.
One thing, though, that I would also add about that scene, though, is that I think this does help to explain, to a degree, why George Lucas left Grievous's cough in there for this series. Because the thought was, right before the films, you get the Clone Wars micro series where Mace Windu crushes his chest, and that brings about the cough that we see in Revenge of the Sith. But he goes out like a punk, pretty much, in Revenge of the Sith. Here what we have is a string of defeats for Grievous that sort of emasculates the character, but in doing so, and building that cough back into the character, we're seeing a weaker version of Grievous here in this series to set up Revenge of the Sith than we did in the micro series. I'm wondering if Lucas is purposely undermining the character's effectiveness so that he doesn't seem quite as out of character in Revenge of the Sith compared to what Lucas had previously approved with the Tartakovsky series.
Honestly, Nathan, that makes a lot of sense, but I have trouble believing that Lucas is putting that much effort or has given Filoni that kind of direction to say, hey, this is really going to help make some of the other things make sense and help the fans think about it better. That doesn't sound like anything George Lucas would give two flips about.
Well, this is the man who decided to make Jabba's palace's door much bigger from the outside, but not from the inside. So he works in mysterious ways.
True. Now, I do want to go back to Tarples. I have got to applaud this series for taking a character like Tarples and killing him in the show. Not because I got anything against Tarples. In fact, I think most people could agree that if you had to pick one Gungan, you know, to be focused on anything, you'd probably pick Tarples because he's not a clown. His voice is dialed back a little bit. Even in episode 1, I always thought to myself, man, Qui-Gon, why don't you just take Tarples with you? He probably knows how to drive that sub. That shocked me. I'm like, holy crap, we've had action figures of this guy like, you know, what, 12 years ago. He showed up multiple times. This is a movie guy we kind of know. Granted, he was really only in episode 1, right? I mean, was he even a background character in episode 3 at, you know, at the funeral? Well, obviously not, I guess, if he got killed off. That would be kind of interesting to see if he was, you know, accidentally part of that, but
yeah, I don't think we've seen him. I don't think we saw him in episode 3. I know we haven't even seen him in the Clone Wars yet, so.
No, he's been pretty much, and that's the thing about this particular death, it's a safe death from a continuity standpoint because any of the stories in which he took place tended to be circulating right around episode 1 or even right before episode 1. I mean, this is the furthest in the continuity from a storytelling standpoint that we've ever seen Tarples. So killing him off here has really no impact rippling forward whatsoever. And it has dramatic impact that works. You know, he actually gets to die a death that means something from a storytelling standpoint and from a character standpoint.
And it's just really cool. I mean, he didn't go out like a punk. He went out, just like you said, he went out in a cool way that had some meaning. But then you also got the feeling, too, that, no, you didn't just kill me. I'm sacrificing myself. So it was kind of like in his control because I wanted to do this. And he shoves that pole through him, you know, through Grievous. I thought, dude, that was really cool. I mean, forget the ridiculous premise for a second. Forget the fact that we'd like to see how they kind of shut down the droids. That little fight in a vacuum was cool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was actually, I mean, I actually said awe when a Gungan died. That takes something. Of course, I can't wait for the deleted scene on the Blu-rays when we see Grievous kiss him as he stabs him.
Oh, man. No, this was a great emotional twist back and forth because as soon as you see him die, you know, you get that awe feeling. But on the immediate attack into Grievous, that stab, I mean, I was sitting back going, damn! And I wish the Gungans would have done that. I wish we would have seen the Gungans do that whole lean back, whoa, kind of thing going on whenever he did that.
Oh, no, he didn't.
Like Jerry was saying, taken into a vacuum, I really liked this scene just because it was actually gave Tarples some some halfway decent street cred kind of there. He was badass. He was really cool. And the visual of him kind of jamming that, I don't know if it was a spear or just a staff or something, up through, like, under Grievous's, for lack of a better word, rib cage, like, out through, like, his neck. Like, that's a pretty exciting thing to see. That was cool. I had a hard time with his death, mostly because it was kind of like net zero. Like, he didn't accomplish anything in the long run, as we're going to get to with the end of the episode. So I felt like if he had actually made a difference in the war, I think I would have been really, really happy with his death. As it is, he went out really cool, but I feel like he didn't achieve anything, and that bugs me a little bit.
Yeah, if he'd done that knowing what Anakin was about to screw up for him, he would have been mad.
You know what's ironic, and I didn't even think about this until right before Jen started talking. Dan, I think, mentioned a phrase, the death of Captain Tarples. There was a story called The Death of Captain Tarples back in 2000. It was in Star Wars Tales number 3, and it's actually the story of how Jar Jar gets to the surface after his banishment on Naboo. So it's funny that we finally get to see the death of Captain Tarples when we've had a story named that in which that type of thing didn't take place. Jar Jar is actually considered, quote, the death of Captain Tarples, as in, you will be the death of me. And in a sense here, not with Jar Jar being responsible per se, but with it being those two plotting together to save their people, in a sense he did die with at least Jar Jar involved.
You know, Jen, the one thing about that is you're right from the fact that they had to let Grievous go. But if Tarples hadn't been able to do that, then at the same time, a lot more Gungans probably would have ended up, you know, being killed. Tarples' sacrifice, though, made me, as the viewer, even more angry of how stupid Anakin was later. Because, you know, if he got any kind of communication whatsoever, hey, the Gungans are not going to attack. And oh, by the way, we've got Grievous. Why would Anakin just not turn around, head back? Well, I don't really need the stupid priest guy. I mean, whatever. I mean, who cares? I don't even know where he's going. Fine. What's he going to do now? That, to me, actually created some anger for me at Anakin's. Like, golly, you moron, what are you doing?
But with Anakin involved, I mean, you do have a reason, at least, for the sacrifice to have at least meant something. Because while it doesn't really mean anything grand in the huge scheme of galactic affairs, if they had not captured General Grievous, they would not have had someone to trade for Anakin. And who knows what Anakin's fate would have been at Dooku's hands later.
I think Anakin was meant to be out of communication for that period, because I'm sure if they could have got him back, they would have. But yeah, I'm sure that obviously was a plot point so that we had a reason to give Grievous back. But we're touching on it. While all this is going on with Grievous being captured on apparently hundreds of thousands of miles away because it's not raining there, Anakin is chasing Rish Lu. Dooku gets the call that Grievous has been captured, puts in a call to Darth Sidious, who says, capture Anakin and trade him back, because I guarantee Senator Almadala will make that trade. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So Palpatine so knows what's going on, which we already knew because of things he says in episode 3. But this was at this point, it was like, oh, wow, Anakin's going to screw everything up.
I do like the confrontation that we get set up between Anakin and Dooku. I wish it would have been something that played out in a separate episode. It would have been nice to maybe see something of an exchange between those two, similar perhaps to what we got with Dooku when Obi-Wan is a prisoner in Attack of the Clones. Gives us a chance to really delve more into the characterization of these two and give them some more dialogue, just so that we can flesh that out just a little bit and give us more of an impact emotionally when we see things that happen, of course, ending in Dooku's death in Revenge of the Sith. I do really like the fact that whether he's taking out Rish Lu or he's dealing with Anakin in the lightsaber duel, every time he seems like he's got the upper hand and he's done well for himself, Dooku does that whole I'm going to brush my sleeve thing. And this created the great joke that we're going to have probably all the way up through the end of this series now, when we're sitting here watching it at my apartment, which is the Jay-Z thing. We need to have a Star Wars Jay-Z parody of something, you know, somebody make one of these, because my immediate thought as soon as I saw him do that the second time was, if you're feeling like a pimp, Dooku, go and brush your tunic off. And I started cracking up and had to eventually explain that. And now it's been stuck in my head for the last, 48 hours or so.
Wow.
Wow, Nathan.
I got as far as a whole verse, but then I just, you know, I gave
and
up.
That would be the song for this episode.
Exactly. I know you were waiting for it.
I love this fight. I thought this was really well done. This is one of the things in the episode I really enjoyed, because Anakin gets pretty owned by Dooku. Dooku kicks his butt. And I like that, because it makes Dooku seem like a credible villain. And, like, he held his own against Yoda in episode 2. So he should be, I mean, granted, Yoda may have won in the long run, but he was giving Yoda a run for his money. So this should not be a character that Anakin should be able to handle very easily. And granted, he had the droids with him, but he still took Anakin down really fast. And he was doing it in this way that just every line of his posture said, like, you are below me. He kept turning his back. And I love that, because he's just, like, so haughty during the entire fight. I loved it.
Question is this the moment that Anakin refers to in episode 3, my powers have doubled since the last time we met?
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. I was going to say that there's Wikipedians out there now redoing the math on, okay, now how long has it been since they met the last time? How long did he have in which he could double? So how much does that mean per day?
Well, I think Artie always throws out the joke, my powers have doubled since the last time we met. You know, last Tuesday.
Yeah, at this point, I mean, we're getting closer and closer. He must have, like, a serious growth spurt in the Force, like in the last couple weeks of the Clone Wars.
It'll be like the day before, and then we get a training montage like Rocky, and then he goes in, you know, like
Invisible Hands. Now, Jen, I agree with you that the Dooku-Anakin fight I thought was really well orchestrated. And Anakin, though, did very well. And one of my notes I took down here is that, you know, at the end, right before Dooku just really put the smack on him, he started kind of Vadering out a little bit when he just kind of had enough. He then took all of his fear and anger and took those Magna Guards and just, like, force pushed them all out of the way. Like, they didn't even matter. Granted, he just didn't have enough in the tank to do it, but it was an intense battle. I thought it was really well done. I'm still kind of angry that Anakin walked in there in the first place, but we all know this is one of the weaknesses of this show. They can't capture Grievous. Duh. Anakin can't defeat Dooku. Duh. But the journey there was pretty cool.
You notice that as he's walking in, Rishu was like, hey, it worked. Anakin Skywalker is here. Anakin should have heard that from the doorway and said, you know what? Never mind. Turned around and left.
No, because I'm Anakin freaking Skywalker. I'm still going to take y'all down.
Or then maybe he should have said something like, that's right, I'm here. Something like that.
But unfortunately, Breckenmeyer wasn't available to do the voice. That sounded like a robot chicken line you just threw out there.
Yeah, so Anakin shows up, and then Dooku kills our second named Gungan, the only other cool-looking Gungan. I wonder if he kissed him in the outtakes. You know what made me mad about the fight? You guys talked about what made me mad, what made you happy. It made me mad that I looked down at the counter, and that was at the 18-minute and 30-second mark. It's like, oh, wow. Maybe they are going to... No, Anakin's going to bravely escape or something. And then we're at minute 20, and they're making the call for the switch. And then at minute 21, 30 seconds, they're making the trade. And at minute 22, Anakin's, oh, I'm sorry. And up, oh, end credits. What the heck happened there?
Did you guys have a hard time with how Padme was handled in this? Because I know this is supposed to be a big conflict for her. Like, this is her husband versus the war. But, like, we've been led to believe time and time again that she is this person who will do anything for the Republic, for the democracy, to make sure people are kept safe. I found it really odd that she caved so quickly to this switch, because yes, Anakin is vital, but they have Grievous, and he is vital to the Separatist war effort. And I'm really surprised that that was done so quickly. I feel like if they had ended with her not being able to decide and maybe done something else in another episode, I would have had a lot better time with it. But the fact that it was made, the decision was done in like 8 seconds. So it was, I had a hard time swallowing that.
See, I kind of wish, and we had, at first she was like, no, I can't do it. How could I do it? And it was really Jar Jar and the real Boss Leone who was actually being supportive. And I think it's one of those situations that's what she wants in her heart of hearts, but she just can't. But if anyone else says, no, you really should do it, then maybe she feels a little bit better about it. But Jen, I think you're right. I kind of expected, and I would have preferred, if there had been a conversation with the Jedi Council, and maybe it was Yoda and Mace that said, nah, we've got to get him back. Or maybe Obi-Wan lobbied for it because it's Anakin or something. I wish it had been outside of Padme's hands, because you're right. I would have pegged Padme, and I guess I'm kind of saying the show got it wrong, but I would have pegged Padme as saying, well, that's a shame, Anakin. We've got Grievous, and, well, we can end the war. We really can. And, Well, that sucks. I mean, I really would have seen her go that way. I'm with you on that.
I totally agree. I mean, I would have expected this to be the beginning of a two-parter where she allows him to stay in enemy custody because her love for the Republic, her duty is so strong, she would not just give in like that. The fact that she caves so quickly, along with all the stuff about calling him Annie and all this stuff during the episodes, it's like she's giving away to all the Gungans the feelings that she has. It almost seems like Jar Jar and Leone know about the personal relationship in order to say, go ahead and do it. Otherwise, they're crap when it comes to being representatives. Of course, somehow they think that Jar Jar's a senator now, not just a representative. So apparently, you know, he's up in stature. But yeah, it didn't really seem to work. I mean, maybe if she had struggled with this for a while, more than just about 8 seconds, as was mentioned, as opposed to it just being like a snap decision. I mean, the way that it turns out, the way it plays out, granted, there's probably more to it, and you could have taken more scenes and just said, oh, well, she deliberated it a little bit off screen and then made the decisions. We don't see that, kind of the way they say about Revenge of the Sith. But in the same frame of mind as many fans look at Revenge of the Sith, this woman, Padme, as this weakened character here, as she is in Revenge of the Sith, she gave up Grievous and made this deal, giving up her principles in a sense, faster than Anakin fell to the dark side in Revenge of the Sith, and I'm not sure that was even possible. It's like he's rubbing off on her.
From you, all right. I learned it by watching you.
Although this, that's Gungan diplomacy, right? That no giving up, General Jar Jar. We think of something. My give up. That's basically Padme saying, my give up.
So maybe it's a Nimbusian thing.
She lost the will to resist.
On one hand, I would have liked to have seen her resist and the next episode be him fighting to escape. And, you know, maybe if they hadn't given him that scar, torture and trying to escape is how he gets it. And they show him again and then they agree to make the trade. But on the other hand, this is the corner they'd painted themselves into. Yes, this is awesome. The Gungans are going to take General Grievous and Anakin and Padme are there. But that was the only way they could go with it. Now they can go home and say, oh, yeah, we took care of that little uprising thing. They don't need to bring up the whole, we had General Grievous. We could have ended this whole cranking war. But Scarface there is a little bit soft in the head. So he blew it all for us. Or the skirt was a little too soft, and she gave it up for this guy.
The funny thing is, this was an entertaining episode. I enjoyed watching it the first time. I had fun with it. I was scratching my head from time to time, like at the very beginning, and just at the pacing of the ending. But I had fun watching it. Only on the second viewing, when I'm looking at it with a more critical eye, a lot of the enjoyment disappeared, and I'm just sitting there sort of banging my head on the desk. I think that this is just something back in the day when it was being aired on television, no VCRs, no DVD players, no downloads, and just something you saw once, I think it would have worked great. I think it would have been just a fun evening and everybody pretty much forgets about it afterwards. But in this world of repeat viewings, I don't think this one is going to hold up very well at all over time. It barely holds up now.
I actually like this episode. I thought it was enjoyable. I would definitely take it over the second episode of our first arc because I thought that was ridiculous and pointless, but not a horrid start to the season.
I'm just hoping we've gotten the Jar Jar out of our system. We can put him away for a while because I'm tired of him. He's been in every episode this season so far.
Wow, you're right.
But we do get usually 3 or 4 heavy Jar Jar episodes or at least Jar Jar appearing episodes, so... You know, maybe they decided, hey, we'll get this out of the way early. Maybe we're getting all the stupid out of the way early this season, and we're going to get to the good to the rest of it. So we're going to get our Jar Jar out of the way these first 4 episodes. We're going to get our droids Gulliver's Travels ripoff out of the way next week, and we can get on to the good stuff.
Actually, Nathan, I have to echo your thoughts a little bit because, and I only watched it once. I don't intend on seeing it twice. I didn't enjoy it that much, but I did really kind of enjoy this episode, actually. I mean, for being a Gungan episode, I thought the Gungans were treated pretty well, at least as well as the Mon Cals were. I mean, Jar Jar wasn't even annoying. He actually just kind of handled business. Now, the little goofiness with the chair, yeah, you're going to get some of that. But seriously, by Jar Jar standards, that was really tame. You know, I thought the battle with Grievous was really cool. I thought just purely the fight between Anakin and Dooku was pretty cool. And like I said, you knew some certain things had to go down, like Grievous was going to get back to the Separatist. Although, you know, we kind of say that, but we did see Newt Gunray get captured by the Republic, but then you know, Asajj Ventress rescued him. So they could have done a little bit more with it. They could have kept us going for a couple episodes to say, man, what are they going to do? How are these, you know, how are they going to keep Grievous, or how could they possibly keep? There could have been a little bit more of that, but I'm not surprised that there wasn't. The moment that Sidious said, hey, we can arrange for an exchange of prisoners, I thought, oh, okay, that's how they're going to wrap it up. But seriously, I thought Gungans looked good in this episode, and it wasn't obnoxious to see him. It was a complete throwaway story, though. I mean, I don't think, and based on the preview we saw for next week, this isn't going to tie into anything or lead us to anything. I know I believe the premise of the show was kind of ridiculous. I don't know why the Gungans would be threatening the Nabooites, and why they'd possibly be connected with the Separatists at all. But whatever, you know, I can get past that and just say, hey, you know, what was actually in the show was pretty cool.
And let's say, I mean, I still would say that the Gungans work much better in the animated series than they ever did on film as part of the live action films. The Gungans are in their element when they're in animation, and they're not nearly as goofy. They fit the premise of the world a little bit better, and their humor, whether it's just the writers handling it differently or just the context around them being in a cartoon series, works a lot better, I think, than it ever did in the live action films. I don't groan when I see Gungans in this series at this point. The only time I groan when I see Gungans coming up in the series is if I see a cast listing and it's not Ahmed Best doing the voice of Jar Jar, because when they did the other voice, it was pretty horrid. But beyond that, they fit, you know, better than they have before.
Now, before we get into our discussion of the preview for next week, we did have a few voicemails.
Hi, it's Fernando here. Just saw the new episode of Star Wars: The Clone Wars Season 4. And I have to say, when this episode first started, I felt like I was watching a part 2 of The Phantom Menace. But it was actually a pretty great episode. And, like, the battle between the Gungan and General Grievous was epic. And Count Dooku with Anakin was epic. It just was like an awesome episode. And yeah, it was really, really, really cool. And kind of weird how they didn't bring back Boss Nass, but some like other guy. But I don't know why they didn't bring back Boss Nass. But yeah, it was a really great episode. I really liked it, and I can't wait for the next one. Bye.
What's going on, RFRN? This is Ben Devis on the forums calling in with more organized thoughts on this past Clone Wars Shadow Warrior. Now, right off the bat, we see Padme with Anakin again running off to solve some new problem, and I had to think, couldn't this episode have been done just as well with a different Jedi? I mean, maybe Ahsoka, I don't want to say necessarily Plo Koon, but you know, like somebody else that hasn't gotten as much screen time as Anakin or whoever else. And I got to thinking, especially with how well they had the Gungans later in the episode, couldn't they have used this to introduce a Gungan Jedi? And I know how silly that sounds at first, but I mean, later in the episode, we see that they can handle themselves pretty well. I mean, well enough to deal out a considerable amount of damage to Grievous, the likes of which I don't think we've seen for quite a while. But you know, if they did it right, and if they didn't overuse him or turn him into another goofy Jar Jar-esque character, I think it could have been, or it could be, very good counterbalance to Jar Jar's goofiness. But I guess we'll see if that'll ever happen. I can't say it will. But it was nice to see the Gungan submersible from The Phantom Menace. That was a pretty nice callback, I thought. And to see Captain Tarples, was it? It's always nice to see characters from a childhood movie. And I don't know if you guys noticed, but the music that they played when they had the submersible first make their descent was very reminiscent of, I don't know if it's like the Gungan theme, or I think I read the title was Swim to whatever the Gungan city name was, but it was very, very reminiscent of that. So I thought that was interesting. And Boss Leone and his favorite witch doctor friend, that whole scenario was really easy to figure out because he's standing there, not blinking, vacant stare, very monotone, and say, Leone's acting weird. I wonder what could be the cause of that. Oh, I think I know. It's the freaky-looking Gungan with a giant bone sticking through his nose, snout, whatever. But I don't know if they intended it to be like that or... And another thing, I was surprised at all the stabbing and the impaling and the killing that they had in this episode. I mean, with Leone getting shanked as the Gungan witch doctor is making his escape, which, if I can go off on a quick rabbit trail here, Anakin could have just ran the opposite way. Unless you guys saw him, he ran all the way around to go get that Gungan riding creature. I have no idea what the name is. Yeah, I thought that was pretty odd. I mean, he could have just ran straight at him, not all the way around, but okay, with the stabbing with tarples. I mean, in just the sound effects that they had when the stabbing was going on, I mean, it was surprising, to me at least. Now, this is one of the very few moments like that I can recall at all where Jar Jar was actually funny. He wasn't goofy. He wasn't silly or being stupid or anything like that. It was actually kind of funny. But when they had him strut so confidently into talking with Grievous, and you know, when he first sees him, the look on his face, the way they have him recoil, the throwing of the arms, I thought it was pretty funny. I mean, I must have watched that at least two or three times, and that was one of the very, very few moments where Jar Jar was actually funny. And I guess I spoke a little too hastily in the last voicemail that by taking Jar Jar out of the whole Clone Wars, if they used him right and they didn't throw him in for, hey, he's clumsy, look at that laugh. If they used him with more moderation, I think it would be better, but they're going to put him in for a quick gag as they set something else up. But like I mentioned earlier, when the Gungan versus Grievous fight came up, I was genuinely surprised at how much damage they dealt to Grievous. I mean, I don't, like, since Layer of Grievous, I think, not since that episode have we seen him suffer this much damage. I mean, honestly, the first time, my jaw dropped when I saw all that. He's getting those little boomers. He's getting those chucked at him. He's got one of those Gungan electro staffs all the way through his chest or torso, whatever. So that was very surprising for me, anyway. And let's see, fast forward later to the prisoner exchange scene. That was very well done. The scenery they had, like the sunset/sunrise, right up against like these dark storm clouds in the sky. I thought that was very striking to me. Overall, I liked the episode. It was done better than Gungan Attacker Prisoners. And Jar Jar, he was presented, it was better than the previous episodes. Hey, at least he didn't spit on anybody. That's always a plus. And looking ahead to next week, it looks like we get to see the Ents aliens. I think it was Jen who said that in some past episode, or either with the Ents aliens or the Tron'd out aliens. I'm not sure. And we also get to see the droids in space, the whole adventure. So that should be funny. And we also might get Arnie's favorite line of the. Great, it's going to be another one of those planets next week. So I just remembered something. Back when, with your guys' Season 3 wrap-up, but when you guys went over the preview, I think it was the WonderCon preview for Season 4, and I don't know, it might have been Arnie or someone else that brought up the quick scene of Grievous fighting the Gungans and how bad that could be. I so hoped that like it would have been the Clone Wars, like the development team bringing in the Battle of Omaha Dune, that storyline from the Star Wars comic, Star Wars Republic, The New Face of War, because, I mean, it would have been a very good opportunity for them to take the show if they were trying to go, like, more serious or for the older age range. It would have been a very good opportunity for them to bring in something new, and they could have introduced Dirge, hopefully not as a heaping pile of Twizzlers and or sausage, but they still could have brought that in and given I mean, if they didn't want to do like a flashback or a timeline screwy episodes where they jump back a certain number of years to show something, they could either have done that, or I know it would have been hell with the continuity, but they could have still brought in Dirge, had him working with Dooku to, I don't know. I mean, they could have brought it in, but I guess I looked it up again, and I think given it was 10 months after the Battle of Geonosis, it wouldn't have worked very well unless they did that episode, like the timeline jump backwards. It wouldn't have worked very well. And then again, with the whole swamp gas and whatever effects that might have on the Gungans and everything, it might have been a little too much for the audience. But, you know, I thought it would have been a nice change of pace, especially with the chance for them to bring in Dirge, who I remember was, I don't want to say wicked. He was done pretty well, because if I remember right, I thought that would have been a nice change of pace if they brought that in. As always, I love the show, or love the podcast. Thank you for all the work everyone puts in to bringing it to us every week. And looking forward to next Clone Wars episode and your guys' coverage of it. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Josh. I just finished watching the episode Shadow Warrior. Overall, I thought it was pretty cool. I actually really liked this episode. There's things I didn't like, and then there's some things I really liked. But overall, when I think about it, I think they're good things because they kind of stood out. For one, I just loved it when the Gungan submarine thingy, was like, I don't even know the name, was going into the water, and Jar Jar and Padme and Anakin was in there. It just felt so episode one. I was like, oh my goodness. I didn't really have an opinion on that weird magic thing. It sounds kind of weird, but it did make sense that, you know, these cultures would have some sort of religion. I think I got teary-eyed when Tarple died, just because I love episode one. And I don't know if that conflicts with anything, but I was really surprised when that happened. And it kind of pissed me off when they're just letting Grievous go. He sacrificed his life to capture Grievous, and then they just let him go. Just change it for one Jedi, even though, you know, Anakin's the chosen one, but still. That made me a little mad. And then, let's see, what else? The lightsaber fight with Anakin and Dooku was totally awesome. Pretty cool stuff. And it seems weird the Clone Wars is going with some kind of theme, taking, like, different stories. I mean, we got the storylines. I mean, we got the, basically, prisoner exchange, the people look alike, so they switch places. Then last week we got Jaws and the Let My People Go Moses story. So I actually kind of like it, believe it or not. I hope they go with that theme. I'm not looking forward to next week's episode, though. I could just see so many ways where they could totally mortise all over again. Okay. Yes. Call you guys back next episode, maybe. I don't know. Bye.
Hey, this is Glenn, Dooku on the forums, where you can read my post that was referenced in last week's show about Prince Leechar being the end of the Mon Calamari line. This week's show, even more Gungan, that's not the title, I don't remember the title. I kind of like this episode. I mean, I liked, especially like that the Gungans were able to capture Grievous. I mean, I think that was kind of a, you know, an interesting sort of twist that I didn't really expect. You know, I was like, oh, let's see Grievous lose and get captured. I mean, that would be something interesting. And I liked how Sidious obviously sort of showed that he knew that Padme and Anakin had something going on and that she'd be willing to trade for him as much as she wouldn't want to otherwise. The only thing I possibly didn't like is that, you know, if they had to sweep the other you know, Gungan leader, Boss, whatever his name was, you know, if they made that change out of Boss Nass just so they could have, you know, Jar Jar impersonate him, I'm a bit disappointed with that as a reason to do that. Although I have to say that Ahmed Best did a really great job of voicing both characters. So when, you know, Jar Jar was impersonating him, you know, Ahmed was sort of impersonating himself and sort of switching back and forth between two voices that he was doing. I thought that was really cool. There's a lot of other really good voice work and some of the main actors doing minor roles. I think this works. The only other thing that sort of bothered me is sort of how it fits in the timeline. You know, we just had the Gungans returning from, you know, Mon Calamari, I guess, and all of a sudden they're ready to face a battle against the Naboo. I feel like there should be a little bit more of a time gap between these episodes. I guess they sort of had a little bit, you know, in the newsreel, some stuff going on, but, you know, to air it right directly after what we had last week, it just felt sort of out of place there. I don't know if it would fit, you know, perhaps after the one we're going to see next week, but that's what I thought, and I'm sure I have another lot of things. I'm sure you'll have mentioned these things already, so that's all I'm going to say. I thought it was a good episode, but there's still no standout episode yet this season, and I certainly don't expect next week to be a standout episode, so maybe after that. Bye.
We want to thank everybody who called in and left us a voicemail. Remember, you too can leave us a voicemail about your thoughts on the latest episode, and it may be played in our discussion.
Okay, now we did get a preview for next week, and it's going to be our droid-centric Gulliver's Travels episode. Now, I do like that on StarWars.com, the tag is that the droids are in trouble again. A nice throwback to, our summer series 2 years ago. I think Jerry's mentioned this before, and I'm with him. I think that RFRN made droids cool.
Nobody was talking about droids until we picked it up. I'm just saying.
We'll test that theory if in 2 years from now they do some Ewoks episodes.
I do like the fact that we get a scene, obviously. I mean, it's been in the trailers before, but the preview for next week where they're essentially in space and being launched or whatever out of the ship, so they're floating, being the longtime EU reader, it harkens back to a couple of comic book covers. I think one of them, I think it was a Marvel series cover, and then they took that cover and redid it to a degree for that KB Toys Star Wars special comic that had the reprint of Russ Manning's Constantia Affair in it. So seeing them floating in space immediately harkens back to that for me, and I get sort of that smiling at sort of classic Star Wars, classic 1970s, early 80s type Star Wars references being made. I doubt that it was on purpose, but that's immediately what springs to mind for me, and I can't help but smirk at it.
I'm looking forward to seeing some clones in this. I feel like we've barely seen them, and I'm really liking what we've seen of Commander Wolf. He's really kind of craggy and dry and has this really like dour sense of humor kind of thing that he goes. He's very kind of controlled and kind of snarky. I really like him. I can't wait to see more of him. I'm hoping he's going to be around more than just that little bit where he drops that one line about this kind of planet.
Yeah, I like Wolf too. I'm really looking at his armor. His helmet looks like it's slightly different than the other clones, so I want to see a better view of that. But I love the final line that the little critter says and C-3PO translate the final line of the preview where he says, "Welcome to our disaster. Glad you could make it." That's great. I think since we already know, well, maybe we know if it wasn't cut from something else, since the clones are dropping lines, like it's going to be another one of these planets. I think this is going to be the episode where they're just going to try to be goofy and funny, and that they're trying to be goofy and funny without so much Jar Jar is going to be an interesting twist. I really hope they drop some kind of musical cue that references the old droids theme song.
There's nothing about that episode, or at least what I saw in the preview, that is making me look forward to this episode. I mean, I know where it's going. I love that it said the droids are in trouble again, but I'm not hopeful. But I wasn't hopeful for this one, so maybe they're going to have a pretty nifty little episode waiting for me next Friday.
I hope that they have to win at the games for the little critters, and they got to race around a hole.
See who the new leader is?
Yes!
Or you get Mungo Baobab showing up and go, "Yahoo!"
There you go.
All right. I want to thank Jen, Nathan, and Jerry for joining us. Jerry and Nathan for returning after their little extra break at the beginning of this season.
Hey, thanks, Dan.
Thanks. Good to be back.
And we will see everyone back next week when we discuss Mercy Mission.
See you next time. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Berent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark, Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a production of Venganza Media Incorporated, copyright 2011, all rights reserved.
Meanwhile, Jar Jar is left with Captain Tarful as the Separatists land.
Tarful.
I always get those.
Tarful's.
Tarful's? Tarpul's? Wait, which one's got the P and which one's got the F? The furry one or the...
Tarpul's is the slimy one. Tarful
is the furry one.
I
should remember that.
Nice.
F for furry.
Oddly, I was going to say the exact same thing, but my F word was fuzzy. And maybe someone else has got another F word later.
Don't encourage Nathan.
You're right. I do like fudge. Yeah, yeah. Deep down inside, he was a human.
that takes me back to the chasing Amy scene where they're talking about Darth Vader and deep down.
You mean it's not?
What's a Nabooian? Or turn to Padme and say, hey, Padme, in this episode, why sa Yusa calling me Annie in front of everyone?
They're just Gungans. They'll never remember that.
You know, he's like eating raw Gungan eggs or something.
Oh, jeez.
I'm telling you, the ASPCA is going to be all over this by the time it's over.
Mon cows, high in protein.
It's a vitamin.
Padme shows up in, you know, his training camp at Hoth, and he just goes, I missed you. You have to know Rocky IV is like one of my favorite movies ever. Non-Star Wars. You know, the line, I missed you, was actually in Rocky IV. I just didn't pull that up for, you know, bad reasons.
And in Star Wars, it would be, I missed you, I know.
No, with Anakin, it would be, I missed you, I think.
Then he'd say, I hate
Jeez.
You.
Jeez.
There you go. How did you train, Mon Cal eggs? How could you? They're animals, and I ate them like animals. I ate them.
Oh, you man. Need to be human.
Wow.
I think we just have our own parody in the making here. We could be a YouTube sensation by the end of the week.
It loads is crazy too. Go and brush your tunic off.
Okay, but seriously, our outtakes are like, I think, everybody's favorite part of the show, and we got gold right there.
You need to start putting them at the beginning of the episode.
I'm beginning to wonder, there was a point during the micro-series, like, why do I bother? This is what everybody wants. If I leave this in, people actually listen to the whole episode, not just the last 4 to 10 minutes.
Exactly. So, I'll tell you, when I turn it on, I always like click, click, click. When I hear Brock saying the credits, I'm like, okay, it's time to listen. If I was in the episode, so I've already heard the discussion. That's what I mean, of course. I didn't do that with the last
one. I don't need to hear it. I lived it.
Yeah, but I have this like bizarre curiosity of saying, okay, what did he edit out? What did he edit out? Wow, not a darn thing.
You know what we're going to find? We're going to find that the reason why Boss Leone and Jar Jar look alike is because they're in-laws or something. Because, you know, that means you're related to it. It's like your brother's sisters, nephews.
Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it.
Did you just say a Naboosian thing?
I did. Hey, if we could all start making up different things to call the Naboo, then I'm going to go back and edit in a different word for him every time I say it.
I'm going to go Old Testament here and call them the Nabooites.
I'm going to go all Caribbean and call them the Naboobies.
The Naboosteens.
That's great. Dude, but Dan, I give you the best reference of the day now with the, you are right. Learned by watching you. That was awesome.
I'd love a chance to drop an 80s drug.
You love the chance to drop an 80s drug?
Well. Sorry, I got distracted by myself. Drop an 80s drug PSA reference.
Who taught you how to do this?
Yeah, right up until the point we meet the father, son, and daughter reincarnated as Gungans.
That'll be the day I type up my resignation.
You're the welcome to his Immortus.
Actually, I think I could see the humor in that episode.
You know, this is kind of like when they use the same thing as from the Citadel with the carbonite to get behind enemy lines. They had used it in the previous story for the Digest comics because they couldn't do it back in a previous season. That line about "Welcome to our disaster, glad you could make it" was actually cut. It was originally going to be said by a character looking into the camera and breaking the fourth wall in the Mortis trilogy.
Man, you had me. I thought you were actually serious about something till then.
Yes. I got him. It's your way of saying that the setup for the joke was just too long, wasn't it?
No, not at all. I actually believed that you were bringing up something that this had actually been used before. You really did get me.
If you have StarWars.com open, you should close it and keep it closed forever because a new site sucks.
You mean the new site that says, go look it up on Wikipedia like you did anyway.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Because we don't give a crap.
Data bank my butt. Go look it up on Wikipedia.
That's funny.
And scene.
And we should totally have music. We should have a Jay-Z playing to lead us out. Or something just like lead us straight up.
It's some crap.
You know, that once you get to be a certain age, age differences stop mattering until you start making references. Like, we'll be sitting there in a meeting at work, and, you know, I sometimes forget I've been teaching there for 10 years now, which boggles my mind. And there was some comment that somebody was getting ready to leave the meeting for a second, and they'd come back and resume it in a minute. And I don't remember who it was that made the reference. It was the, after these messages, we'll be right back.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. God.
And, like, half the people laughed, and everybody else was like, what the hell was that?
Well, what was that cartoon? What show was that?
What was that from?
Oh, that was ABC Saturday Morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't a particular show. They did it all throughout
the year. It was like the dog that gets blasted with water by the fire hydrant, and when you realize later that it's because dogs pee on fire hydrants, you're like, that's so funny! But, you know, as a kid, you're like, that's just mean to the dog, man.
That's funny. Man. Oh, my gosh.